You know their backs were broken to get into those things.
Spike scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait. Designation: Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We are about Lost Souls Podcast, joined by Adam Camilleri.
Good day, everybody.
And Red Powell.
What up?
Welcome everyone to the show. Thanks for inviting us into your ears, wherever you're checking this out. World Championships Warhammer coming up, and we want to talk about it. We will be talking about it. Red, you'll be playing in it, Adam.
Oh, snap.
You and I, shouting it.
Yeah. Going to be speaking some, I don't know, what do the kids say, mad licks about the games? No, we're just going to be cool. We're going to have a great freaking time. No, yeah. I know. This is the joke. We're going to have a great time, hopefully bringing you the best content you have ever freaking seen from one of the most amazing events that's ever been held. And we do have a little, well, it would be remiss of us to not give this event some due diligence, because there is a lot that Paul and I will not be able to convey on the moment, just because the sheer scope and magnitude of this event is mind-boggling. It's what they have managed to put together is truly special.
Yeah, over 40 countries from, you know, five continents around the world are coming to compete to crown their country as the champion of Warhammer. And that is not just 40K. That's good against Age of Sigmar, Underworlds, and Kill Team. On the Games Workshop Twitch stream, you will see coverage from all of those games and game systems. And it's not just going to be in English. It's actually going to be on some other channels coming invited to stream as well, in both Spanish and French. So if you happen to be from that area and you'd prefer to listen to some of the coverage in that language, or those in either of those languages, I'm going to provide some links to that too. It's going to be truly international coverage for a truly international event. Over 40 countries, like I mentioned. We're talking about folks from Chile, Japan, Sweden, Northern Ireland, Norway, Peru, Poland, Gibraltar, Romania. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And they're going to be competing for, in whatever game system they qualified for, to be able to come, and competing for, you know, placings, and how they place in those respective events earns their country points. And yeah, let's break that down a little bit.
Yeah, so similar to how you would see, I guess, the medal tally breakdown at the Olympics, and this is kind of the Olympics of tabletop gaming, because it's not just one game system, like you said, it's a multitude of game systems all added together and judged in a multitude of ways per game system as well. There's the best overall, there's the best painted, there's the best general, in addition to others. And essentially, you add a number of points to your nation's tally based on how well you did. But am I right in saying it's not every score you get? Is it the top five?
It is the top five, yeah. Top five from each country.
And that stops, you know, because we do have, there are quite a few players coming from the United Kingdom, quite a few players coming from the United States, of course, because these are the two biggest hubs of tabletop gaming in the world. Not surprised that there's an abundance there, as there would be in the Olympics. There's always an abundance. You know, they're able to compete in every category, you know, larger populations or developed nations with big sporting cultures, these big tabletop cultures, we'll start calling them, you know, but only the top five scores will go through. So you can't have, you know, just because you have more players in attendance doesn't mean you're just going to overwhelming tidal wave.
There's 40 players from the US or whatever, and they're not going to go in and won't rack up a bunch of scores and close out the other countries in other categories. Yeah, that's kind of a nice design. So everyone is coming in, you know, basically competing on an even playing field if you are able to field players in every game system.
Yeah, I'm looking at the World Championship points that they've got here. So if you get first place in, you know, generalship or overall score, paint score, victory points scored, etc. And there's a bunch of other things that'll be added. But first place overall will get you 10 points to your nation. Second place is 9th. Third place is 8. And then 4th through 10th is 7th. I mean, even 11th through 50th will get you 5 points. So essentially, if you had two players come, you know, 11th and 19th, they would add 10 points to your score as much as if they had come first. So there is, you know, you want a good spread of very solid scores is what I'm seeing here. Of course, get more if you can, but if you want to end well at this event, you don't need to be absolute superstars to do your nation justice, is what I'm reading here.
Yeah, I think that it's going to bring be really cool because this is played over the course of 4 days of gaming.
Yeah, I think we start on the Thursday, pull up on the Sunday. Our voices are going to be raggedy, but passion driven, and definitely won't be taking it easy. And yeah, but yeah, you're right. 4 days, it's going to be hellacious.
Well, amazing, especially you know for these players that are going to get to meet people. One of the things I'm actually most excited about meeting is players from all around the world that I would have never had the opportunity to meet before.
Exactly right. I mean, the lovely Red Pal's going to be in attendance, mate. You're going to be rubbing shoulders with people from all over the world. How does that feel?
Oh, snap. No, I mean, like, it's going to be remarkable. Last year was amazing, and then where they've taken it to now, and, you know, admittedly a little personally biased in the venue of Atlanta, so I'm pretty happy that it's back in my hometown area. And then to see everybody, to see all that they're bringing to the World Championship. We've even got a U.S. Army esports player is participating, representing the team. So that's going to be pretty awesome. And then, of course, I'll be there for the grand narrative. And last year was so much fun that I can only imagine that they're going to up the game from last year to this year. And I'm really looking forward to it.
What sway does the Forge Narrative podcast have that the World Championships is held in Atlanta, the hometown of two of our? It's not nothing.
It's not to bring too much attention to that. Let's just say it's of course, it's just a happy coincidence.
Pure coincidence. Yeah. That's right.
A town that I was in, 9 months ago, I was hanging around.
Yeah. Exactly right. And at the area we were at down there near that, the Hyatt, you stayed at the Hyatt, right?
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah.
There's a walking trail that will take you up to I'm sorry, you were at the Hilton.
Hilton, that's correct.
Hilton. There's a walking trail that will take you to the high. You never have to go outside. So that's you're right there where it was.
You were talking about those concourses. That's actually cool. That's a good area. I like that.
Yeah. Lots of things to do around there, which you know is going to be cool if we, you know, we're going to be locked in streaming some games, of course. But you know we'll have to sneak out a little bit at night, do some cool things.
I expect you to wing us on down to the 5 points for some fun and games.
Yes. Vortex will be calling us. And as well as some a few other places around there, a really nice area. You know, there's a Trader Vic's nearby.
Nice.
Yep, I'd sneak down there. Hopefully we get the opportunity to do that. But anyway, I'm looking forward to it. But back to this is that there are start games on Thursday, play the Fridays, going into Saturday and Sunday, the field starts to separate out into two different brackets. You got the championship bracket and then the world bracket that people will start to filter down through to.
Yep. Now, what's unique about this is that, I mean, of course, there's this little tick box they've got here, the eligibility awards. So, I mean, if you make it to the world bracket, that means you're eligible for the best general award. But every other award is still available to everybody in their respective brackets, and regardless. So if you still do your best in that one, you can still win every award apart from best generalship. Because naturally, that's going to go to the person who gets, you know, undefeated or the max amount of
highest
points in the undefeated.
Highest battle points.
Exactly right.
Yeah. And being undefeated at the same time. So.
Yeah, spot on. And so there's the championship bracket, which will be the games 3 to 7, which will be double elimination as well. This is pretty new as well. Double elimination. Is a concept we haven't seen in many, you know,
we did it last year at the finale. Double elimination.
I think it's really cool.
Continue on, but this is the evolution and next step of that.
It's a relatively new concept to the wargaming pool. We usually a single elimination, like you lose, you went out of the winner's bracket, whatnot. The double elimination concept, I think, is exceptional because you can just go into your rock, paper, scissors matchup on the wrong terrain or the wrong mission and go second and then, you know, feel like you were somewhat, not robbed, but you just didn't have the tools to get the job done or the tools to face the problems you were equipped with. Like you went to, you're a bricklayer sent to a carpenter's job. You know what I mean? And so that dumb elimination really lets you work into the event a bit more, really lets you sink your teeth in. And to some extent means that you can just take what you want to play and not stress and give yourself gray hairs about, do I have this matchup sorted, this matchup sorted, this matchup sorted? You can just let your list do what it's good at to some more extent and just get mastery with what you want to play rather than having to spend weeks and months, you know, possibly perfecting your list. Get the list that you want to play and get good at it rather than the other way around.
This is a nice little anecdote is that the winners of the brackets last year for the best overall and the best general bracket from the finale had both lost a game during the course of the tournament. So they had to play that extra swing match. And another cool thing about, you know, scoring points and then being countries and everything, and we're going to try to bring you as much context and texture as we possibly can, but it's very possible that depending on the player, let's say that there are five undefeated Australian players going into the last round. You know, their games are not necessarily going to be the pivotal games for their country's performance in those last and final rounds.
That's correct. That is correct. Like, realistically, is that because you're saying that not every one of those scores may get counted, or is that because...
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And because they've already locked in their position for whatever it is that for their country ranking in that particular those particular games. So it's very possible that, say, the Underworlds match with someone from the UK or from Poland is actually the swing match that we'll be trying to focus on because that's where the points are tied up for
correct
what may have someone go from position 3 to 4 or whatever.
Yeah, and exactly what you've just said there is the things that we're going to I am personally so excited about. The stories and the narratives that are going to come from this event, like literally like legendary moments may very well occur and are very likely to occur where a nation jumps another nation because of something that happened, you know, down the road yesterday. And, you know, because of that, we're in this specifically amazing situation where if this person pulls off this win by this much, we could see an upset. We could see, you know, a juggernaut, you know, nation being, you know, overtaken by little old Malta or somebody.
The world's eyes are going to be a Slovenia versus Chile in the kill team, you know, the
correct
Sunday at 4 p.m.
Yeah, because the podium hinges on, you know, Chile getting 40 something odd points, you know, and them. And yeah, exactly right. That kind of stuff is just going to be breathtaking. I cannot wait.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And then, of course, the stories from all the players. What we tried to do last year was bring some in between like round interviews and talks from players and from folks on the narrative side too. Like, we're going to try to bring coverage of both the narrative and the competitive side of things. And say we're going to be busy. We're going to be busy.
Even you and I, there's only so many words we can say in a minute, in an hour, in a day. And I'm not sure we can do it justice, but we're going to do our best.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, come check us out in the chat. Let us know, you know, keep us upbeat when we start to struggle on that third day or whatever. But actually, you know as well as I do is that you get kind of the jazz from the event and the vibe and all the players.
You get the rub.
Seeing all the games. It's going to be hard not to want to just jump on the table.
I come away from streaming an event and I want to start a new army. Like 9 times out of 10, I'll be like, why don't I own that? You know, and it's a problem because I got to talk myself down or talk myself up for the next like week or about either justifying, especially to the partner, being like, love, how would you feel if I just like $2,000 was missing from our savings? Australian you know, pricing withstanding, but you know, that kind of stuff, all the opposite being like, Adam, you don't need a sister's army. Stop it. You don't need it. Morphin Vale is really cool. It doesn't matter. You got 4 armies. Stop it. Yeah. That kind of stuff.
But, you know, we keep an eye on the meta on one of the other shows that we do called the Warhammer Meta Chasers. You know, so we have an idea of what is like the highest concentration of armies in certain areas that we see in tournaments. And I'm curious if that's going to translate to what those areas bring, you know, in their delegation that comes to the event.
Exactly right. You and I, as analysts, you know, of the international game, and Red can absolutely speak to this as well. Different regions in the world have different flavors of games. They play games differently. There are faction specialists in different regions that kind of, I don't want to say give a flavor or a, they kind of warp the meta around them at points. You know, Skari is a great one, or our good friend Dustin Henshaw is a great one up in the greater Toronto area. There is an abundance of GSC, Gene Steel Cult players in that area because there are a couple of extremely good faction specialists. Red, probably similar experiences with World Eaters the world over when and everyone else was not playing them. You were crushing skulls, and then all of a sudden we saw a little bit of a wave of World Eaters.
No, you hit the nail on the head. Is that when players are doing well or a faction is doing well where they were not perceived as being contenders before, it starts that kind of wave. And when they're when somebody cracks the code, that's actually a segment that we can talk about pretty soon here in a minute about, like, you know, of course we're going to talk about Blood Angels a little bit, but, you know, Marines in general.
We have seen, I mean, even as far back as the hallowed days of 6th and 7th edition, I can't remember, I think the list has now been enshrined as Lichtershame.
Yeah.
And I think this is the first time I remember this happening, where a faction that no one thought could contend to the top level won the LVO in phenomenal fashion, and then Morlocks and Lictors were sold out worldwide. Like, You can set your faction on fire and you can forge the narrative of your destiny on the tabletop. And it is so phenomenal to see. We saw at Tampa, Sisters of Battle went from going from absolute obscurity so far in 10th edition to winning one of the biggest events in the world.
And World Leaders, faced against World Leaders. So, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
You know, exactly. We're talking about... We're seeing World Leaders like we are being played by great players and are doing really well, which is an assault army, which is, again, leading me into the, like, a lot of folks were saying that assault is not the focus of this edition.
Mm.
And I kind of tend to agree that shooting is more reliable in more situations.
I hold with that. I look at the rules and I look at how a lot of armies function, and then I'm like, yeah, shooting is obviously better. It is combat, but you don't need to charge them. You can be on the other side of the table. You're still attacking, you're still hitting.
To people.
Exactly right. You can throw it instead of having to punch them with it in the face. And then I look at the setting, and I don't have to with. There's always that suspending of disbelief when you've got a chainsword in the 41st millennium when we're dropping, you know, nuclear arsenals and virus bombs from orbit, and like I'm going to hit him with my chainsword. So
I love it with every fiber of my being, but
me
I do
too.
Sometimes wonder where, like, why are they trying to close out this space battle with a boarding action?
It makes sense to me that in the 41st millennium of the game, shooting would be a little bit better, at least in the rules, than combat. It makes perfect sense to me. I think it's totally fine as a game mechanic, but we have been shown that when you put the context of the missions, the filter of looking at how the game is played and must be played in order to achieve victory, combat is necessary and important and good.
Well, and let's also think about too is that, you know, objective control and controlling objectives and being places, you still get a little bit of benefit of scooching. You don't get to scooch quite with the freedom and flexibility that you had before, but you still do.
But there is no better way to win a game than taking what a unit that your opponent has scoring points on the objective, killing them, and then in so doing, put a unit that you have scoring points on that objective. That is just a basic tenet of the I don't know if people are into anime on this show, but the laws of equivalent exchange from Full Metal Alchemist. That's the exchange rate of the trading war of our great game of 40K. I'm going to take your unit off an objective that is going to score you points. I'm going to stop it scoring points. And in so doing, I will score points by putting my model on that objective. And the best way to do that, of course, is combat.
And I think the rules, you know, led us to think that shooting was just going to be so dominant and so aggressive. But then the actual practical play of the game, and especially start people get to be more familiar and more codexes and stuff come out, you know, we're going to see, I think, more of a balance. It may still be 60%, 70% shooting, but not the 80, 90% that we were seeing right after the edition dropped.
Spot on. And in saying that, like, as analysts, like we've said previously of the game, the index portion, when it was purely indexes, no codexes were added to the mix, was a shooting gallery. Everyone was taking abundance of shooting weapons and shooting units, you know, the Wraith Knight being the perfect example. Can take a gun, can take two guns, can take a sword and a shield. No, everyone only took two guns.
Two guns
all the way, all the time. Guns. given any choice, everyone took guns. And that has diminished. That has only diminished from then. That was, I hope that was the peak of it, because now the equal best armies in the game statistically is Chaos Space Marines and Eldari. Now, Eldari, I will say, apart from the Avatars, don't have, you know, real crazy melee units, and the Avatars are both very good. I'm not saying they're not, because they're exceptional, but you're paying a lot of points for them. They're essentially greater demon points values. Mm-hmm. But Chaos Space Marines is I'd say a 1/3 to 2/3 melee to shooting army, with all the units of Chosen and or Terminators if you take them, and or, you know, Cursed Cultists and sometimes Chaos Spawn and things like that, versus, you know, then they have the Obliterators, the Forge Fiends, et cetera, et cetera. So we're seeing much more of a all-comers style. Melee is making it into most of the best armies in the game.
Yeah, I like that. We were originally talking about what players bring from certain areas. We're seeing a shift to some of this stuff. And I'm curious if that's going to translate to what we see on the world stage here in Atlanta here in a couple of weeks. And, you know, really looking forward to bringing you that coverage and talking about it. I mean, you know that those players are going to be very excited to be there, both in the narrative and the competitive side of things. And we're going to try to capture as much as we can. I'm excited.
Me freaking too, man. I cannot wait.
We're
going to talk about...
It's been a bit.
Dude, we do. We got to spend some time. I'm arriving on the Tuesday. I'm going to be absolutely not in a good way.
Probably useless.
Yes. 30 odd hours in transit, I'll tell you, will be my journey to Atlanta once again. But we have some interesting things developing with the codexes that have come out that I think we're going to talk about now. Yeah. Where, you know, I talked about Index 40K, where everyone's just playing with indexes, and the diversity we're starting to see now that there's a couple of factions that have multiple detachments available to them.
So with this, we're talking about specifically Space Marines, and I know we talked a little bit about on the last show, the Space Marine Force that I took. I've got a confession to make too, is that I took incursors in the list and then basically played like the worst rules of mixing them up in my head from them being infiltrators or incursors.
Amazing.
Yeah, because I'm using the, you know, the basically what is essentially like the White Scars detachment.
So the Stormlance.
Yeah, where you get to, you know, basically advance and charge.
Mate, advance and charge is a hell of a thing.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And then also taking the lieutenant that allows you to move after you shoot.
Oh, yeah. Is that the Phobos or the Reaver Lieutenant?
It's the Phobos Lieutenant.
The Phobos Lieutenant, yeah.
Yeah, the Reaver Lieutenant is slightly different, and then there's another Lieutenant that's also in Phobos armor that's slightly different that just came out in the starter set.
I'm surprised we didn't know that, because there's only a handful of lieutenants in the game. There's only a couple to remember. How could we get those rules incorrect? What a surprise.
So, anyway, again, that was... No excuse for that. And this was the test game. This wasn't a tournament game, you know, or whatever. You play these things to get the rules down.
Mm.
But basically play like the worst. So I played you need the assault guns, right? That the incursors have. That's what allows you to advance, shoot, yeah, and then use this leader ability, which is the lieutenant in Phobos armor, strategic dispersal. In your shooting phase, after this model's unit has shot, if it's not within engagement range of one or more enemy units, it can make a normal move of up to D6.
Yes, so, very powerful.
Yeah, no, it's great. Again, especially, you know, I'm trying to run these as Blood Angels, and then which you can use out of the Space Marine Codex. And other generals out there are playing Blood Angels with different detachments, and these lists are looking different. And I think that armies, I mean, I'm talking about Blood Angels, but I think that the game really does kind of make it seem really okay to use whatever detachment you want for whatever flavor of Marine you want, more so than it has in previous editions.
Yeah, I think I'm following, and I agree.
Yeah, so with this, you know, taking, by the way, finding this lieutenant in Phobos armor, very difficult to do because he's only in the Vanguard detachment box.
Yeah. He was only in one box ever. I mean, if you got and converted the captain, or if you converted
the Reaver armor.
I guess I'd be pretty happy with it. I wouldn't mind.
Well, the Reaver's got the cool skull helmet, which, look, yes. I have skull helmets on. I use Reaver helmets on other Marines, but I can see how you maybe not want to do that because you're telegraphing what that character does or whatever to somebody you might know. But it's a quick conversation. And they're all the same base size, same model profile and everything. You know, they got a gun and a knife. They're not that different.
That's right.
But you know,
I'm definitely somebody who has been waiting and wanting G-Dub to do a new Legion of the Damned upgrade kit, just because I want a pack of skull helmets. I just want and flaming shoulder pads.
So that strategic dispersal is not the only cool thing in this. Is while this model is leading a unit, weapons equipped by the models in the unit have a lethal hit ability. So take a couple of lieutenants. You take the Biologus Apothecary.
Yep.
Basically, everybody's got lethal hits.
Lethal hits are good, man. And the reason you're saying that lethal hits are especially good now is because with the Oath of Moment change to only being the hit roll, lethal hits, you know, means you get to generate a lot more auto wounds, and you don't have to worry about the fact you don't reroll the wound now. You're just wounding on the hit roll.
Yes, you're exactly right.
Very powerful.
You know, according to, you know, because the mistake that I made playing, and I'm saying this more of as a cautionary tale kind of thing. You know, you have to be able to shoot to be able to use that ability. So, you know, got to bring out the blitzing Fulisade, which is in your shooting phase. One Adeptus Astartes unit from your army that has not been selected to shoot this phase effect until the end of the phase. Range weapons equipped by this model, by models in your unit, have assault ability.
Yep.
If such weapons already have the assault ability, then to the end of the phase, they get sustained hits one. So I had to use that because I was using the wrong weapons. But
okay.
It worked out. It worked out. But I'm saying you don't have to do that if you actually play your incursors the right way, because they have assault weapons.
Well, you were saying about how powerful you found the move away with the lieutenant. There is that ability in this detachment as well. You've got the Windswift Evasion for 1 CP, which is in your enemy, your opponent's movement phase, just after enemy unit ends a normal move, advance, or fallback move. And one unit from your army is with 9 of them. You can just make a move of up to 6 inches. So, and it doesn't restrict you on a lot of the other ones. Restrict on, you know, they would work better on mounted models. Of course, this is the uber mounted go better, more better, go faster detachment. But the evasion is just for anything. So that's actually really good.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. I mean, there's a lot of play here that let me see. I know we're describing this as the White Scars chapter because that's, you know, it's about, there's a lot of there, one, there's a White Scars picture on the Stormlands tab.
That's right.
And then there's, you know, rules for mounted things. But I also took Outriders because I think Outriders are actually pretty good right now.
I don't mind Outriders, yeah, especially with Advance and Charge, and they auto-advance. Do they auto-advance 6?
They do, yeah.
So they do, like, yeah.
What is it, 20 inches, 26 and, inches or something like that. It's crazy.
Yeah, declare a charge, not bad. And better than that, because one of the big issues, I guess, is that you have very good quantity of attacks out of Outriders, but they don't, you know, they're only strength 4 with a single pip of rend of AP. But Shock Assault stratagem is very good here, which gives them lance and reroll to their
lance
charges.
Plus 1 to wound in close combat.
Yep. Yep, and then reroll charges. So you go that 20 inches, declare your charge, and then all of a sudden, instead of being a 7 on average, you go to a 9 on average. And then when you get there, you punch up a lot better. So I think that's a very good 1 CP strat on them.
Yeah, also in this list, I took Assault Centurions.
Okay. Well, that's just crazy talk.
They're still kind of slow, even in the... even with the advance and charge, but we have seen a lot of Marine players out there shifting towards las cannon centurions.
Yes, devastator centurions with las cannons and or grav cannons. I mean, I don't think there is a right choice. I think people are saying that in a tournament setting where you don't know what you're playing into all the time, you know, you have no options or choice. The las cannons are a bit more of a ubiquitously good choice, as in, you know, they're always going to be good because you've got a one shot each. That, and a lot of people are taking this in the Vanguard detachment, which we're starting to see a lot of now. We're starting to see that really, really catch fire. And they hit on twos because they've got a one command point stratagem to get +1 ballistic skill and +1 armor penetration. So you got one shot las cannon that, because of the Devastator Centurion special rule, can be hitting on twos, rerolling ones, a la doesn't need to be shooting into the target that has Oath of Moment on it. You can put that on something else and let your other units, you know, get a lot of more benefits.
Oath of Moment is a Space Marine, basically kind of generic ability. It lets them nominate a unit, reroll hits. Previously in the index, reroll hits and wounds. That is now reserved for the first company detachment, but all the Space Marines still get the Oath of Moment, which lets them reroll the hits.
Yeah, exactly right. And so you'll have Devastator Centurions with las cannons hitting on twos, rerolling ones, and they have full rerolls to wound because the las cannons are twin-linked. So they're getting essentially the old version of Oath of Moment. They're getting all the benefits. And they're getting extra armor penetration. So they'll be rend AP 4 on their las cannons, which is pretty good, especially into things where, you know, there's a lot of you love to see it. There are a lot of, you know, rhinos that don't get an armor save against those. There are land raiders popping up here, there, and everywhere. We've got Forge Fiends. We've got Night Spinners and, you know, Yin Khans and Avatars of Cain that all need las cannoning.
And, well, you're laughing at my Centurion assault squads. You know, they do
I am giggling.
Sustained hits 2 against monsters, vehicles, and fortifications.
I do not debate that when they make contact, they are a hell of a thing. My issue is their ability to make contact. Yeah, well, the Storm Lance is the best option you're going to give them, right?
I got to say, I just love the fact that, like, out of all this stuff, right, we put the new Infernus Primaris, we put, I mean, even the Hotness of Desolation squads, so on and so forth, and out of nowhere, we're like, but let's bring back Devastator Centurions, right? Like, let's reach far back. Let's clear off the, like, hey, dig through your shelves, like, shuffle through all the new Primaris models. Nope, not the Assault Centurions. Don't get me wrong. I agree. There's plenty of good stuff there. They're going to be great. You should do it, Paul. I want to see it. Blood Angel Assault Centurions.
Look,
and yet,
I'm close to making it
work. Devastators back there. Devastator Centurions out of nowhere. Left field. I mean, great pull. I applaud it.
Absolutely wild, isn't it? But I also, I'm frustrated. There are so many good-looking, pretty, suave, stylish, style and profile and Space Marine models out there, and you're telling me I got to go back to the Centurion models, which I gotta say, in the spectrum of Space Marine models, they are some of my least favorite.
I mean,
not saying they're bad. They're just in the spectrum of Space Marines, they're some of the least good.
Are you talking about like aesthetically?
Yeah.
But like, look at them. They're actually probably the most aesthetically accurate, right? Like, they actually look like somebody got up in that suit and like is sitting in it. Whereas, like, we've talked about it before, like Terminators and whatnot, you know, like their backs were broken to get into those things, right?
Well,
like,
the new ones are
that's true. Yeah. The new ones are spot on. Better. That's true.
But 100%. You're absolutely right about the old ones. They're like, wow, that guy has a mighty hump in his back. He's bent double in there. Yeah, totally agree.
In my list also, I mean, I ran the Aggressors, you know, with the Biologus Apothecary like we're talking about, but also ran a Captain in Gravis armor with him.
Yeah.
Well, it's a cool model, and he's got a lot of attacks. He has a lot of attacks.
I actually rate the Captain in Gravis armor. I think he's not bad.
What jumps out to you?
I think he's just versatile. You can take a lot of different weapon loadouts that are all pretty good, and he's thick. He's a thick boy. He's hard to shift.
6 wounds, toughness 6, 4 pulse invulnerable save, 3 plus armor save. And then a refuse to yield each time an attack is allocated to this model, have the damage characteristic of that attack.
That's what I'm talking about. Toughness 6, 4 up invulnerable, half damage. You ain't going anywhere for a while.
Yeah, and then you got also, we have once per battle round, one unit from your army with the disability can be targeted with a stratagem for 0 CP, even if another unit from your army has already been targeted with that stratagem this phase.
Which loadout do you prefer weapon-wise? Because there is quite a bit of decent debate about what the best weapon choices are.
I went with the Power Fist and then the Relic Chainsword.
Yeah, that's fair. I suppose that's the most bang for the buck. I am a double fist. Let's go. I want 7 Power Fist attacks. Six Power Fist attacks. Thank you very much.
No, 6 Power Fist attacks are pretty good. But that Relic Chainsword is 3 extra attacks. I mean, and they're all 2 damage, you know, but I built him with the Chainsword, so that's what he's got.
Nice. Yeah, fair enough.
It's fun using it. That unit has a very, very large footprint.
Yeah, huge.
It's like base size.
Yeah, there's a unit that's kicking about quite a lot in the Vanguard also. Because I think for the first time in a while, Marnius Kalgar is shining. Absolutely. Possibly outshining the rowboat, his grandpappy.
We're seeing it more often than not. You know, again, obviously there's a little bit of a compromise you don't have to make if you take Marnius.
Well, exactly right. And also, you're talking about units that supplement aggressors. And he's legitimately probably the best one apart from the apothecary.
And you get the Victor's Guard, you know, so that's...
Yes, exactly that's right.
Way more wounds. What are you looking at that point in time? 6 more wounds. So you're adding 12 wounds to whatever squad you throw them in.
Yeah, crazy. And he's 185 points. He is very cheap for what he brings to the table. I think Marnius Kalgar is possibly in the best state he's been in since I've been playing the game.
We've obviously strayed a little bit away from Blood Angels, but I will read out Marnius Kalgar here.
You can paint him red.
You could. You actually could. And you know who's going to say you're wrong. So everyone just screeched to a halt out there in the internet land.
They did.
I apologize.
They did.
I would never do that.
You say that now.
Well, this unit is leading a unit and contains a Marnius Kalgar model. That unit is eligible to shoot and declare a charge in a turn in which it advanced or fell back.
Wow. What a rule.
You get one command point, additional command point, if you have Marnius on the field.
Never a bad thing.
Nope. And then Honor Guard or McCrag. While this unit contains one or more Victory's Guard models, unit's Marnius Kalgar model has a 4+ Field of Pain ability.
Yeah, so you can't precision him out effectively. Like, you can't use sniper abilities or any stratagems once you make combat to try and get him, you know, dead so they can't fall back in charge or do any other special things or stop the CP generation. He's just going to be super hard to dislodge.
Yeah, I guess I'll tank these on these 6 wounds, toughness 6 you got to try to get through.
Yes, exactly right. Oh, you actually made your attacks worse. Congrats. That's a fine choice.
And he can lead an incredible variety of units. Aggressors, Assault Intercessors, Blade Guard, Company Heroes, which is another standout unit. Like, if you're curious, like, what am I going to do with this unit of random war gear or whatever? Well, you're going to win a lot of games. That's what you're going to do, because 4 wounds apiece, and they're awesome. Eradicator Squad, Heavy Intercessor Squad, Inferno Squad, Intercessor Squad, Stern Guard Veteran Squad, and Tactical Squad. And we've actually seen Eradicators make their way into a list a lot more recently also.
Yeah, I suppose it's because we're seeing vehicles. It's weird, yeah, because you'd think when you look at the Eradicators, their special rule is just incredibly good. Rerolling to hit, to wound, and damage. You reroll everything. Every possible thing that you could reroll is getting rerolled here. Is that, I can never remember if it's versus monsters and vehicles or just vehicles, though.
For the Eradicators?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I was getting sucked into Uriel.
Monsters or vehicles. Yeah. Monsters or vehicles. I have one gripe. I wish their weapons had another one more inch on their range, so that they could.
That's just one.
Just well, because I just want them to be able to be in melter range from reserve, to walk in 9 inches away from somebody and have melter range. Because that's my only gripe with them. Because apart from that, they're amazing.
It's almost like somebody thought about that. Maybe why.
It's almost like they were worried it would be too good if they didn't.
Yeah. That's pretty funny. But talking about Marines, I know we were talking about like how you can find a detachment that works really great for your style of force. I did take Mephisto on, I know I mentioned some of this in the last show, but largely just to give him a lot of wounds inside of a assault squad.
Ablative, so he's got a bit of padding.
Yeah. Turns out she used him to kind of control objectives, but I didn't mind that either because it gave me like a lot of extra oomph in that unit. I feel like the game has the potential to kind of get into especially if you're playing an assault army, to get into a bit of a grindy bit to where you just need to be there to have one or two models left to be on that objective in a tight game. And that's in what happened. So, I don't know that I'd take Mephisto in that unit again, but I did take the Sanguiner also, and I really did like what the Sanguiner brought to the table.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so I think the Sanguiner,
dude, I think they are. I think they, so the detachment that they got in the index is fine, totally fine. Sanguinius, nothing wrong with it. But I do love the variety and the depth that has been given to every Space Marines player. And yeah, you could say Space Marine privilege. I'm sure Red is going to say something that has that effect.
No, definitely not. I mean, I'm assuming that this is just, a sign of the times to come. We'll all get ours. It's okay. I can bear with it.
I do think so. I think that they have shown, and I got to applaud this design philosophy from Games Workshop. I've called it siloing rules. We have siloed the rules into, or packaged them into, detachments. So there's very few bleed overs. You don't need, once you get proficient at the game, or once, you played a bunch of games or whatever, you can look at the detachment of your opponent is taking, and then just have a couple of things that, you have attached to that in your own narrative. Like, okay, I read Paul's Stormlance task force. I'm like, cool, advance and charge, +1 to wound, can run away if I get too close. That's that, and bang, I've got those identity points attached to that. I don't need to remember the 35, 45 possible stratagems you could pull out of your bag of tricks in 9th edition, which is kind of where we got to by the end of things.
Yeah, I agree with that. Touching on the company heroes, and I know we did a little bit of this in the review when we did it, but, while a character is leading this unit, you subtract 1 from the wound roll. So when you're trying to dig out a squad of models that have 4 wounds apiece, you're -1 plus a character leading them. I think that a unit is going to find their way as a staple in a lot of Marine lists.
Yeah, totally agree.
It is good. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back. We'll keep this discussion going. We'll see you in a second.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, we are back. Thanks for joining us. Please consider checking out our Patreon page. Also, leave us 5-star reviews anywhere you happen to be hearing this. If you have not done so already, all that means a lot. Every tier is awesome. And so what helps keep the show going. Sincere thank you to everyone that's done that so far. Assault Intercessors with jump packs. So I did not have any of those in my list because I did not have them built yet by the time I played that game.
Weak.
I've since built 10, and let's talk about it. Hot or not?
I mean, look-wise, I think they look awesome. I've always been a fan of Jump Marines, and I think these guys just take it to the next level. Primaris Jump Marines, let's do it. Do they, all that to say, do they have, they made the newest Assault Marine kit a bit ago, and they actually came in there with like Eviscerators. Do Primaris Marines get Eviscerators?
No.
Oh, they do not. Sorry.
That's my only gripe. My only gripe, where is my Primaris Eviscerator?
Start over. I'm sorry.
They're bigger boys. They should have bigger swords. How did the bigger boys lose the bigger swords?
Oh, man.
Their chain swords are the Eviscerators.
That's it, yeah.
That would be cool if they all had eviscerators. Cool. And yet, I don't see that.
Damn. Maybe that's what they're doing, though. Maybe they're doing, like, you know, like Repentia, or essentially just Sisters of Battle with everyone gets an eviscerator. Maybe we will get an assault squad with it's just eviscerators.
That'd be cool.
How cool would that be? Anyway, I think they're pretty hot. I think they are very good for the points. They're not a game ender. They're not gonna be what Vanguard veterans used to be in, you know, past editions. But they are extremely cost effective, and they can have an innumerable amount of very potent characters attached to them. First one that comes to mind is Shrike from the Raven Guard. Absolutely incredible. One of the best characters in Space Marines. And when he joins, or you can do a chaplain with a jump pack or a captain, these guys can really do a bunch of really important work for you.
So with their special ability is the Hammer of Wrath. Each time you shoot it, it's a charge move. Select one enemy unit within engagement range of it. Roll a d6 for each model in the unit. And also within engagement range on a 4+, unit suffers one mortal wound. So nice to have that kind of built into them.
Yep. Well, what's cool here is that you can do a little bit of a dump of mortal wounds, because they have the grenade stratagem as well. So you can rock up, throw the grenade, do the Hammer of Wrath, and you can, by those means, punch up, because, of course, they've got you know, a couple of special pistols, and then they've got one power fist on, or, you know, a power weapon on the sergeant in addition to more chain swords. So that's the means by which they can conquer greater foes, or, you know, punch up, and then, of course, via, you know, adding in stratagem support, character support. But they can, like I said, they're not going to be a world ender, like, you know, Death Company jump packs, like Vanguard veterans jump packs, but as a very cheap skirmishing unit, I think they are extremely good.
I think that's kind of what I plan to use them for, is just that the wave after wave of marine bodies that can get a little bit difficult to take out, because hopefully you're locking down, or at least isolating some shooting, you know, from your opponent.
Yeah,
and maybe these replace the assault centurions.
Well, you're gonna get a lot of them.
No, Lassie, I can't believe you're laughing. Like, they, Soul Centurions.
Oh, look, bless. I have 6. I would love for them to be good.
A stretch.
Yes, that's what I mean. Maybe. I just love how we have different reasons for taking things in games. And your reasons for taking them are not incorrect. Like, enjoy if they did what you took them to do, and you enjoyed playing them, you are absolutely right, and you should be lauded.
Well, I look at it as like waves. It's like you got wave 1, wave 2, wave 3, you know, and then what's going to, you know, be this eventually that would never get to the center board ends up in the center board kind of thing.
Yep.
And
yep, like, I gotcha.
That's just what I think about sometimes. And I need more reps, but they were a little slow, I'll just say that. So we'll see how that goes. But I think they'd be a good, at least to get in a test game, to sub them out for the assault intercessors.
Yeah, give it a crack.
Another thing, we're talking about jump troops that we've seen, is the Inceptors.
Absolute fire. This is the unit that I believe, with the proliferation of detachments, only got better with the Codex drop. Mostly because a lot of people are like, my Space Marines probably stayed about the same in power, because they got a bunch more diversity in what they could do and, you know, ways they could play the game. But the overall power came down by a bit because of the Oath of Moment change. But I got to say, Inceptors, because all their guns are twin-linked, they didn't need Oath of Moment in the first place, only got better in every conceivable way. And there are so many new and refreshing lists to take them in. I'm extremely excited by them. If I had 18, I wish I had 18, actually. I've got 9.
Yeah, I took 2 units of 3 plasma, but we've seen that happen, and also 1 unit of 6 bolters.
Yeah, well, it depends on the detachment you're taking. In the Vanguard detachment, the Vanguard spearhead, I really like the bolter Inceptors, because they'll have 3 shots each, which the sustained hits 2, but there is a stratagem, like I said, the same one for the Devastator Centurions, that'll let them hit on 2s, and then if they're into the Oath of Moment target, they'll be hitting on 2s, re-rolling, so you can just fish the 6s for the double explodes for the sustained hits 2, and then they're twin linked once they go through. So, and then with the plus rend, they'll have, you know, 18 shots hitting on 2s, re-rolling, which will probably end up, you know, could be like 30 hits. Who knows? And there'll be strength 5, minus 2, 2 damage with rerolls to wounds. So they can even threaten light vehicles. If you are not toughness 10, they can definitely threaten the vehicle and monsters and griblies. So I think they are an exceptional, exceptional gun in that configuration. And then the plasma, if it's ever a question, which one is better, just take the plasma. you're not going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I think you're right. But they also have this meteoric descent ability. So you can basically bring them down with 3.1 away from your target.
Yes, and they are great for stealing objectives. They're great for getting secondary objectives behind enemy lines, deploy teleport homers. What's the one where you have to be within 9 inches of the corners? Investigate signals? Investigate
signals are...
Yeah. Yeah, they're amazing secondary getters because they're just so flexible.
Yeah. But we're seeing those across many Marine lists, and so you'll see them from the Marine players, I believe, for all the reasons we just described.
Yeah, agreed.
I've been doing a lot of dabbling with Marines. That's been happening here.
I think I write about a list a day, and I also delete about a list a day. what was I thinking? And then I'm onto the next crazy idea.
I've been painting up some incursors. That's my
nice.
Yeah, they're the ones that have like the video camera on their shoulder pad.
Yeah. Question for both of you gents: when the indexes first came out, people saw the way the game was being played, and the fact that it's very a lot of the granularity of points is gone. With upgrades and stuff all being free, you just take as you please. It's just pretty much the points of the unit. Have you found that your factions when they're using their indexes became very formulaic quickly? I think a lot of people assumed that, but I don't think it has turned out to be the case.
I'm like you, man. I build too many lists and delete them so fast that very few are the same.
That's fair.
I will admit I iterate quite a bit. I find myself going back and forth through all sorts of stuff. And I kind of label my lists by events. And sometimes, if I've got a certain idea or direction, I'll label it that way. And then I end up with I either give them marks or I give them versions. And I think I've got a Mark 8 of one variant of list. So I've gone through 8 iterations of that. So I understand. I get it.
Damn,
I can bounce around. I mean, and it's just small variations here or there, especially because with the way points are and you don't have, effectively points are power level. And I find in a lot of cases I'm sitting there with 1960 points. And I'm like, man, what am I going to take in, take out, adjust, or whatever to make up to try and efficiently use those points? And at the same time, or am I just going to go in there with, 2000 point list of 1960? So
I'm telling you, if there was a so you got points for creating army list, I would have the high score for the amount.
I love that.
But I think you're maybe in the spirit of your question, is there a core set of units for whatever faction that I'm playing that always make it into list? Are there some auto includes? Is that
hands down?
Yeah. I think when you had the indexes only, things got pretty ubiquitous. You could just look at the faction and already know, a bunch of it was assumed that you could do that. You could just be like, okay, they're playing this faction. Well, I don't even need to see what the list is. It's either what I think it is or it's worse than what I think it is, so to speak. And I don't know if that's been the case, because I think we've seen a bunch of times where iteration and, tweaking on, especially on the established norms, has resulted in upsets.
Upsets in what way?
As in, I think we saw it last weekend where we saw it was indexes versus indexes at Tampa, and then it was just like brand new world for so many factions that people hadn't been paying attention to. And those, even talking to people, the gentleman who won with his Diptosauridus, he was using a very unlikely, according to many lists, very unlikely build. They did not think that list was something that could win an event. And then it went and won a multiple 100-player event. And I guess I'm trying to highlight that even if the Gladius Task Force list starts with, 6 aggressors and an apothecary, you can do whatever you want with the rest of the list. It doesn't have to then have 3 units of Inceptors, 2 units of Infiltrators, 2 units of Scouts. You don't have to have all this. You can just, go ahead and take the best thing that makes the most sense, and that the obviously the best choice for that detachment with the combination of the enhancements and stratagems. But then feel free to go nuts. Let your heart sing. And I think that has been shown to work in a lot of cases.
You just heard the all clear for Assault Centurions.
That's it. That's literally what you were saying. That's what I was thinking. I was like, yeah, cool. I wouldn't do that, but...
That's all you got out of it.
You already talked about taking the aggressors with the harm assist. I call him the harm assist, by the way.
No, that's a good name. Yeah.
Apothecary Biologist. You can just have a great list. Take the best thing if you want. There's no reason not to. But then that best thing probably only costs you 300 points. go absolutely wherever you want with the rest of your list.
Nice. All right. Well, that's our show this week. It's a great point to end on. I completely agree. Appreciate y'all coming and hanging out, talking about Warhammer. Appreciate y'all listening. And yeah, we got a tune in for the World Championships of Warhammer on the Games Workshop Twitch stream. Going to be some amazing coverage coming in a couple of weeks. That is going to start on November the 16th. We have a lot of work to do between now and then. I'm definitely going to try to get a show out next week. But if you don't hear from us on this channel next week, come check us out over there, bringing you coverage from that event. Can't wait. I'm looking forward
to it. Yes, please. I cannot wait.
We'll see y'all soon, everybody. Good night.
See ya.
Prospect scan is clear. I think they're gone. For now.